Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Gilchrist Museum opens a new exhibit today devoted to art created by Black American artists. Memories and Inspiration features the artwork collected by an Atlanta, Georgia couple. Cary Davis was a postman, and his wife, C. Betty Davis, was a local television producer. But over 35 years, the couple purchased close to 300 works by local and internationally known African American artists. Jacob Lawrence, Romare Bearden, Sam Gilliam, Elizabeth Catlett, Alma Thomas, and Norman Lewis are just a few of the artists represented in the 62 selected works in this show. That work ranges from paintings, both representational and abstract, to sculpture, prints, photographs, folk art, and mixed media, on subjects varied from history, social commentary, and contemporary realism. My guest today is Gilchrist's curator of art, Laura Fry, and the local guest curator for the exhibition, poet, artist, and educator Quraysh Ali Lansana. Memories and Inspiration, the Cary and C. Betty Davis Collection of African American Art, opens today at Gilchrist and runs through July 26th. Laura and Quraysh, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Memories and Inspiration is drawn from the collection of two extraordinary Atlanta, Georgia collectors, everyday people who decided to build an amazing collection of African American art. Tell us about the Davises and why they collected art.
So the collectors, this exhibition's pulled from one private collection that was assembled by Cary and Betty Davis. And they're a couple that live in Atlanta, Georgia, and Cary worked as a postal worker, and Betty worked for a local TV news broadcast company. And so they had normal jobs, and about 35 years ago, they started building this art collection, and initially were looking at works by friends, looking at the local community, but started expanding out and looking more nationwide. And so their collection today includes more than 300 works by African-American artists. That was really their focus. They recognized at first, they said, these aren't artists that we usually see when we go to a museum. And so they really wanted to focus on African-American artists who have done extraordinary contributions to the American art canon over, you know, the last 100 years and longer. And their house ended up becoming a museum within a home. And they often opened their home to community members, to friends. And I wish I could see it. It sounds like right. Just an extraordinary place.
Well, it sounds like the home itself was almost like a salon of sorts.
Yeah, they invited friends over, and then they opened their home to the public, as Lauren mentioned. And, you know, one of the fascinating things to me about Cary and Betty Davis is that when they bought their first piece of art, they didn't know a single person who collected art. and so on his route, he received some sort of mailer, delivering mail. He would visit artist studios to deliver mail and just sort of gathered this interest in art. And so to amass such an amazing collection and then also to have it in your neighborhood, in your home, and then invite the neighborhood in to see that art it speaks to, I believe, the tremendous spirit that the Davises possess and that they would share it with us as the first museum to exhibit this art outside of Atlanta is also remarkable.
Yeah, and it's also a big step for the Gilchrist of expanding its definition of art that goes on a museum wall.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gilchrist Museum, you know, we describe ourselves as an institute of American history and art, and that's a really broad category. And our permanent collection, while we have this really wide range of material, we don't have everything. And we have only a few items in the Gilchrist collection that are artworks by African-American artists or that relate to African-American history. And we're located in North Tulsa. And so to truly be a museum that's showing all of America, to be responsible to the Tulsa community as a museum that's owned by the city of Tulsa, we feel it's very important to bring exhibitions like this to Gilchrist to truly show this fuller picture of American culture by showcasing African-American art.
And there's something interesting about the home because many people have built this idea of this home as a meeting place for artists and a meeting place for people who would never set foot in an institution like the High Museum in Atlanta, which, ironically, has a pretty good collection of African-American artists. Yes. But because of symbolism and perception. It's not viewed as a welcoming place for certain communities.
Right.
So this house was sort of an alternative.
It was a very welcoming alternative. And I think there's, you know, again, I would also love to visit their home as well, right? I'm fascinated by how they have 300 pieces of art displayed. I mean, the house, is it huge? Is it a mansion? Who knows?
Is there artwork on the ceiling?
It's, right. But you're Rich, but to speak to your larger point, you know, it is an interesting notion to think about how welcome folks feel or how unwelcome different people feel from various communities upon entering a museum or even considering going into a museum of art. And you're right that the High End Museum in Atlanta has a great collection of Black American art. So why aren't Black Atlantans, you know, storming the doors, right? It's a very interesting notion. Here with Gilcrease, or with Gilcrease, and I'm sure Laura can speak to this more than I because she works there and has been there a while, but the idea of why Black folks don't frequent Gilcrease in great numbers, or Philbrook, or, I mean, many of the institutions. I was just at AHA a little while ago. We were having the same discussion. Right. And so that larger question, why don't folks go to these museums? Why don't they feel welcome is something that I think everyone here, certainly here in Tulsa, is attempting to answer and to grapple with that question.
Well, it's no small irony that these works that were, again, sort of to be an alternative to a museum is now on a tour and on museum walls. And it's a really amazing collection because you can see, I think, how they built their collection, because you see some works that were obviously modest. Mm. And you know, as a collector begins, there's a lot of multiples, print collections. But what also comes through is these collectors have an amazing eye.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the really notable aspects of this exhibition is the variety. It includes about 100 years of artwork. It's really from the 1930s through just a couple years ago, and it includes artists who had national reputations, who were really widely known across the country, like Jacob Lawrence, but also artists who might have been, you know, personal friends of the Davises, who were working in Atlanta, like Beverly Buchanan. And so it's three-dimensional, it's two-dimensional, it's very small scale to, you know, 6 feet tall paintings. Really wide range of color palettes, and so it's really this lovely variety of work. And we had a lot of fun, working with Q to try to figure out what are some of the connecting themes that we can find through this diverse body of work.
So Q is a guest curator. What are some of the connecting themes? Because I can see a couple of themes, but also it looks like this is art that's not comes from a certain point of view, or even sort of let me collect one of all of these sorts of things. Sure. It's all about a personal eye.
Agreed. Although the Davises had some particular concerns, so particularly social justice issues as well as representation. So one of the themes is We Build This, which has to do with how Black Americans have invested and been entrenched in creation, whether that's roads like Benjamin Banneker or buildings. And then also this idea of presence, a representation that, you know, we are here. There is a theme of keep pushing, which speaks, I think, most of that art in that part of the exhibition speaks to social justice concerns. And there are some very, very powerful, works of art in that room or under that theme. We also created a Gateways to Tulsa series within the exhibition where Nick Alexandroff and those of us who are part of Tri-City Collective, and we chose some art from the larger 62 pieces and did some research and made historical connections between the art and history in Tulsa to sort of maybe localize those connections to the themes of the art and some of the things that have happened here in the city.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one piece in particular, although there's a number of pieces where you've done that. Calvin Burnett's Race Riot, which is a almost abstract view of two forces warring. And then, of course, the story you tell is actually a very different story than probably most people tell, and it's about why the word riot.
Right, right.
And it goes to the fact that it goes to insurance.
It goes back to those insurance companies that said there's no riot insurance, no civil disturbance insurance, and so no one received a dime for their loss of property, and that included white property owners in the district as well.
And what's interesting is the Tri-City Collective spent a lot of time footnoting and for the stories they told. Why I'm surprised to see that, because you don't usually see that at an art exhibit.
Because we're all nerds. we're all writers, and we're all primarily educators in the collective. I mean, I think there's only one person who's not an educator. So that making those connections and then reinforcing those connections with the history, so someone who looks at that piece of art and then can see the Gateway to Tulsa panel and see those footnotes, and if they are interested in pursuing more information about that panel and that information, then they can have the sources or the resources there to go and find out more information. So it's a public service from nerds.
Well, and you know, when we received these texts from the Tri-City Collective with the footnotes, you know, typically in a museum exhibition, we don't include citations with our labels, but we thought it was important in this case because much of the information that's being shared, I think, might be very surprising to some of our visitors. And to show exactly where that information came from seemed important to really emphasize what was being said, and also, of course, to provide someone with a chance to follow up.
And some statements are provocative.
Right.
And I think it's important to know that this is not just a person's opinion, but it's fact-based.
It's historical fact.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, particularly in this town, in this moment, as we approach the centennial of the massacre, that and other information as well, but certainly as we approach the centennial to the massacre, that folks have access to as much information as possible, because that information, of course, has been suppressed, you know,
right,
by design for such a long, long time.
Well, in this exhibition, I want to get your first thoughts as you saw this collection unfold. And as a guest curator, as somebody who's saying, okay, I have to make sense of this, and can we take viewers on a journey? Mm-hmm. What was your first sort of assessment of this work?
Well, first of all, it's stunning and aesthetically varied, right? It's all over the place. And
purely
so,
abstract works,
right?
Very narrative works, very symbolic works,
right,
as well.
Yeah, so just sort of sitting with it and taking it in, the fact that, you know, there's sculpture, right? There's mixed media, there's oil, right? There's so many different mediums that are displayed in this exhibition that it's really, in some ways, it's stunning. And as a curator, it's almost overwhelming in some ways, because it's such a variety. There are very, when Laura and myself and Allison and others from Gilcrease tried to group those pieces of art and themes, I mean, we were at it for hours.
Yeah, it was a whole afternoon.
Now, is that usually the case? I would think that would be most of the time that's the case. But
you know, each exhibition's different. That's part of what makes it exciting. It's part of what makes it a challenge. But I think every time you come to how you plan a storyline and then how you adapt that to the physical spaces that you have before you, each process, you kind of have to sort out the process again from scratch. And we had a great, I think, group collaboration to really go through this whole checklist, 62 works, piece by piece, and discuss for each one, where do we think this makes the most sense? What does it go with? What works can we group together to emphasize a particular narrative or story?
Now, the very first work you see when you come into the gallery is, again, it helps viewers see that these collectors have a personal relationship with the artist that they're interacting with, and it's a assemblage of a postman, and it is the postman. It's Carrie,
right?
And yep. An artist basically said, "Hey, can I get a picture of you? Can I borrow a U.S. Postal Service shirt and some stuff
and his ID?
Yeah, his ID."
Yeah, and I think the artist is Larry Walker, and he was working with Carrie to do a portrait of Carrie. And so Carrie apparently gave him some of his ephemera from his years in the Postal Service. So here's my jacket, here's my ID, here's some examples of mail. And he thought that Larry would use that as inspiration for a sculpture. But instead, Larry turned around and used those actual objects to build this sculpture. So it's this like kind of humorous, lighthearted. But as you look a little more closely, there's some more serious themes associated with the sculpture as well, with, you know, this question of what do postmen deliver? You know, you get news at your house, you get personal letters, some of the things you receive through the post might be negative or might be announcements that you're not looking forward to. But it's also literally a column-shaped sculpture, so it is a postman in more senses than one. But it's a really kind of fanciful take on really, I think, getting at Carey's personality and doing this portrait with the tools of his trade.
And it's very welcoming, too. I really love that we have it right there at the front of the exhibition, because I feel like it speaks to the joy, right, that Carey, and I'm sure Betty as well, but the joy that Carey seems to exude in collecting this art and sharing this art and talking about this art as well.
And what so shows up time and time again, there's a painting, it's called Carey's Painting, and it was an image that Carey saw of this artist and said, oh, I really like that. And it took years and years, but eventually he made the painting for him, and that's in the exhibition. Right. And Kojo Griffin's Untitled, which is basically shows off the travails of a postman, but there's also a serious message in it in which he's anthropomorphized dogs as people, as a postman and a person hoping to do harm to the postman as well. So these sorts of things are in this as well. So there's obviously a great personal connection between the collectors and the artists.
And I think it's important to note as well that historically, working for the Postal Service is maybe one of the first federal jobs for Black right. Americans. And so there's a great deal of historical significance in that as well, and that it's reflected in this art.
And that was in the Building It section, which, of mm-hmm. course, has Jacob Lawrence's Builder Series number 8, a beautiful, beautiful little
Very.
Piece there, and other pieces that sort of denote how Blacks built this country, oftentimes on their backs.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And that's an important message to hear. But as far as standouts in the collection, there were so many. One, I think a lot of people will spend a lot of time looking at is Elizabeth Catlett's
yes.
beautiful sculpture, Mother and Child. She's mm-hmm. done many versions of this Madonna series, and this is absolutely a striking sculpture. And another one, which this artist has only become familiar again to the public in the last few years, that's Norman Lewis, one of the first abstract painters who happened to be Black American. But there's an Untitled piece from 1964, which is absolutely exquisite. Can you talk about some of the highlights to both of your minds?
You go first.
Okay. There are several that I'm really drawn to. One of my personal favorites is one of the smallest in the exhibition. It's John Wesley Hardrick's Fall Landscape. It's this beautiful little impressionist landscape that just seems to glow with its own light. He was also a WPA mural artist, which several of the artists in the Gilcrease collection were involved with the WPA. So there's a couple firm connections back to the Gilcrease collection. I also really love the Sam Gilliam piece. It's this beautiful, like, abstract multimedia painting with lots of energy, color. It really captures a sense of motion. And he was an artist who inspired Kay Walking Stick, who, again, is another artist who's part of the Gilcrease collection. And she was really inspired by Sam Gilliam's, like, draped canvases that he started producing in the 1970s. And that inspired her work that's in the Gilcrease collection. So it's been really fun to see some of the connections to artists that we carry at Gilcrease.
And you mentioned the first piece, and that is a piece that is out of the European tradition, really. And you see some artists going that route, other artists taking a completely different route, right. and almost rebelling against the expectations of their time period and finding this unique path, which, again, is, again, part of this collection.
That's it. It's very much a part of this collection. It's a part of the conversation of, really, it's a part of the conversation of the turn of the century in terms of art making in many ways, certainly in this country, perhaps internationally as well, but certainly in this country. She wore her family's quilts really speaks to me.
Yes, yeah, that's a beautiful piece.
And because of, you know, there are quilts on the wall, she's wrapped in a quilt while sitting in a chair. We've had very various debates on how the age of the woman, but just that the detail involved, first of all, in painting the stitching, if you will, of the quilts on the wall and then the quilt wrapped around her. And then, again, the significance of quilt historically, from being used as signs and guideposts on the Underground Railroad to family heirlooms, right? And so this – and being passed down from generation to generation. And I think – and even just the patchwork of it also speaks, I think, in many ways to the immigrant – the immigrant experience, although we were forced immigrants, but to the immigrant experience in this country, how to piece together a path forward, how to piece together a living here in this place. So that one really, really is striking for me.
My guest today, Quraysh Ali Lansana, poet, artist, educator, and served as guest curator for the Gilcrease Museum exhibit. Laura Fry, the curator of art at Gilcrease Museum, for the exhibit Memories and Inspirations, the Carrie and C. Betty Davis Collection of African American Art, which opens today at Gilcrease and runs through July 26th. They're my guests today on Studio Tulsa. I think some of the most striking work is in that section or thematic area of We Are Here. You see another piece by Elizabeth Catlett, a beautiful, beautiful lithograph. There's other works that just sort of, just this potency of I will be looked at.
Right.
And so much of the time, Black Americans have been overlooked.
Right, right. And that's a part of, and you nailed it on the head, Rich. That's a part of how we sort of came together with that concept for a theme, that idea. I mean, we are in Oklahoma. We are in the state of Ralph Ellison's birth, who wrote Invisible Man. And Invisible Man is about not being seen, right? So that, I think that section of really what I'd call, you know, representational art, you can't not look at it. We are here, right? And that idea, again, of representation on these museum walls, which is huge, right? So, yeah, I love that section as well.
We mentioned the special signage that's a part of the exhibit that the Tri-City Collective did. You also did a film that reacts to that as well. Tell us a little about that.
Well, what we decided to do, Laura and Allison and I...
That's Allison Rossi.
Allison Rossi. What we decided to do is, because of the uniqueness of this exhibition, and because of the uniqueness of the fact that this is Gilcrease's first real major exhibition of African American art,
at least in the last 18
years or so. Okay, thank you for that. That we decided what we wanted to do was engage community members with the art. So we selected, I don't know, about 15, 20 pieces from the art, and we set them in front of, you know, these are obviously replications of the art, and set them in front of about five or six different members of the community and filmed them while they looked at the art and reacted. So it was very organic, right? So we caught them as they, their initial responses to the art and the stories that were evoked from the art. And so it was a really wonderful process, and I think the film is really, really nice. We're very happy with it.
And there's so many surprises as you go through there. You were talking about Beverly Buchanan. There's one piece that's called called Shack with Chair that has gotten a lot of publicity about it. But there's another little piece, and it's just a one little slice of wood in which it's called One Room Shack, and just imaginatively turned a fragment of wood into an art piece. Mm-hmm. It's just really quite stunning.
It is a remarkable piece as well.
Well, I know there's a lot of special programming about this, because it's one thing to present this art. It's another thing for the community to see it. And I know that's an important goal for Gilcrease in this exhibit.
Yeah, and so coming up this weekend on Saturday, January 25th at 11 a.m., we'll be hosting a conversation at Gilcrease, open to the public. It's free with admission, but it's called Black Collectors For, By, and Of Us. And this will be a conversation with Carrie Davis, the collector, with Amalia Amaki, who's a guest scholar who also worked to help put this exhibition together, and with our guest curator, Quraysh Ali Lansana. And so we encourage everyone to come by for that program. And then a little, we'll have some related programming around the exhibition in the coming months. And so certainly stay tuned to our website or Facebook page for further updates. But we will also, in June, we're planning to do a special presentation of our copy of the Emancipation Proclamation signed by Abraham Lincoln, and to show that in conjunction with this exhibition. So that'll, we'll have, again, more information about that coming up, but we're really excited for
that. Will there be special outreaches to our community of color to get them, perhaps maybe for the first time, to walk through these doors?
Yep, that's been part of our ongoing effort already, to really help spread the word about this exhibition, and to specifically really reach out around the opening and these events to make sure that we're inviting people from churches, from the Black Moon Collective, from artist groups, other galleries, and to really encourage folks to come by.
I know Jack and Jill of Tulsa, and actually there's a national Jack and Jill convention that will be in Tulsa, and the national recording secretary for Jack and Jill of America is once someone whom we interviewed, whom I interviewed, Michelle, and so she'll be bringing scores of folks who will be in this summer. From all across the country to see this this exhibition as well. But yes, it's very important to me. I've already spoken to principals at a number of schools. I'm planning to do more so to get school buses of kids of all ethnicities, but certainly the Black communities, into Gilcrease to see this, so they can see themselves perhaps for maybe the first time on the museum walls. And I think that's, again, that's part of why we do this.
And what's interesting about the collectors, the Davises, there is such a wide range of material, everything from folk art to abstract art to contemporary representational. There's photographs, there's prints, there's multimedia, and there's even, modern realist painters. There's one of the strongest pieces, in the show, is Stephanie Jackson's Exodus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
again, one of many Exodus in our life. This was about post-Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contemporary work that it could be timeless, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The theme is timeless,
yes,
and the story.
It could
be a story of many different exoduses, whether it's immigration or trying to survive a natural disaster.
Right.
You know, well, in some way, I think because of the variety of works, I think there, in some ways, there's something for everybody in this exhibition. If you love really precise realist works, you'll see spectacular examples in this exhibition. If you love giant, bright, abstract paintings, you'll see that here. If you love works that are making a socially conscious statement or really trying to reflect back a mirror of America, that's part of this exhibition. So it's, I think for all of our visitors, there's something they'll find to enjoy in this exhibition.
Great.
I come back to the quote by Clara Luper, Oklahoma's major civil rights leader, and that is, in 2006, in an AP interview, she's quoted as saying, "My biggest job now is to make sure white folks understand that Black history is white history. We cannot separate the two."
That's history.
Mm-hmm. And it's right.
It's all American history.
It's all American history. Right.
Yep.
Right. Laura and Q, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you again, Rich.
Yep. Thank you.
Laura Fry is the curator of art at Gilcrease Museum, and Quraysh Ali Lansana is a poet, artist, and educator, and guest curator for the new exhibit, Memories and Inspiration, the Carrie and C. Betty Davis Collection of African American Art, which opens at Gilcrease today and runs through July 26th. For more information on the exhibit, visit gilcrease.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.